views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show, where we have stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. I'm happy to talk to you from, not rainy Seattle right now, here on KKNW AM 1150. Woo! You might be listening here in this area or somewhere in Connecticut, Rhode Island, or New York on WBLQ AM 1230 radio, or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio. But I tell you, wherever you're listening from today, you are going to be so glad you joined us, because we have got a VIP, one of my all-time favorite guests. But before I get into that, I have to say hello to my better half here in the studio, who allows you to hear these wonderful conversations, because without him, you know, this would just be a telephone conversation you'd never be in on. Mr. Benny Mathers, good morning.
No, I don't know about that, but I mean, this is a VIP situation, so I rolled out the red carpet, I got my elbow, wrist action moving, I'm waving to the crowd, we're ready to get things going.
Oh, yeah. And it's always fun because this VIP guest is somebody who actually, he's a man after my own heart, because he loves the science, he loves the spirituality, and he really takes great pains to bridge the two, which is wonderful in and of itself. But he goes one step further. He likes to figure out how to ground this information in a way that we as individuals can apply in our lives, so that we can actually make the personal transformation and planetary transformation that we're being invited to make right now. And the person I'm talking about is Greg Braden. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He's internationally renowned, you know, pioneer in the science spirituality connection. And, you know, he's got an interesting background. Back in the 1970s, during the energy crisis, he was a computer geologist. In the 1980s, he was a senior liaison with the U.S. Air Force Space Command. In 1991, he became the first technical operations manager for Cisco Systems. And, you know, in addition to the science, back in the mid-80s, he began exploring high mountain villages, remote monasteries, and looking through forgotten texts so that he could look at some of the timeless secrets that, you know, existed sort of in the mysticism realm, but to connect it with science today. His discoveries have led to, 11 award-winning books, published in 38 languages, I think is the last count. And in 2016, this year, he's been nominated for the prestigious Templeton Award. He's all over the place, from the United Nations to networks, you know, television and radio networks around the world. I'm so glad to have you here today, Greg Braden. Hi, Greg.
Christine, I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm thrilled to be on the program today. I'm going to say hello to Benny. I know you're right there as well.
Hey there.
And I have to tell you, when I've been on the road tremendously, as you described in my beautiful intro, and when I am home for a day or two, my office gives me a list of my media, my interviews and films and things like that. And when I see yours come up, as I did last night when I got off the plane, I get a big smile on my face, because we're a great team. We work really well together.
Yes,
I love your show, and I have to tell you, I love your show, and what you're doing is so important because the world is changing. It's not a matter of if the world is going to change. Mm-hmm. Everything's up for grabs right now.
Yeah.
And I think the key is for us, and the opportunity that we have is we have this rare, precious opportunity to direct in many ways how this change turns out, mm-hmm. where the change leads, what it means to our world, and perhaps more importantly, what it means to our lives.
So, Greg, you know, I think some people are having a hard time understanding that this is actually a wonderful opportunity because in some ways things are kind of falling apart. I mean, you know, our political system looks like reality TV these days. Yeah. There's some horrific things going on in the world and there's a whole lot of getting illuminated. So how is this kind of mess, so to speak, the opportunity that you're talking about?
Well, you know, it all comes back to the way we answer a single question. And I'm going to speak directly to our listeners today. So listeners, I'm speaking to you. The way that you answer a single question in your life is the key to the way you think about yourself, the way you solve your problems, the kinds of relationships you invite into your life, the way you heal your body, what kinds of jobs, what kinds of careers you have, as different as all of those things I've just mentioned are from one another. The common thread that weaves them all together is that they are all at the very foundation of the way you answer this single question. And the question is deceptively simple. Every human who has ever walked the face of the earth has asked either consciously or maybe subconsciously, we've asked ourselves this question. The question is, who am I? And there are a lot of us in this world, so the question becomes, who are we? And the reason this is important, it's not just an esoteric, philosophical kind of question. The way that we answer this question for ourselves forms the lens, the perceptual lens, through which we see ourselves and our relationship to the world. It forms the lens that defines how we see ourselves, what jobs we feel that we're worthy of, what kind of life we feel that we're worthy of, what kinds of partnerships we feel we're worthy of, whether or not we trust in the miraculous healing abilities of our bodies, or when we hear someone we trust tell us that we have a disease, in our fear, do we turn away from that miraculous healing that's possible in our bodies to other things that actually destroy some of the systems in the body that keep us alive? All of these, as different as they are from one another, it all comes down to the way we think about ourselves. And this is why your program, Christine, is so important in this kind of programming, because what we're going to talk about today is simply not shared in mainstream. I'm a scientist.
Right.
I'm a degreed geologist. I believe that science is good, the scientific method is good, and science does not have all the answers. It cannot have all of the answers, because all science can do is tell us how things work. It tells us the nuts and bolts of how atoms and molecules and cells work. Science is very good at that. But what science cannot do is give us the wisdom of how we apply that knowledge in our lives.
Right.
This is where 5,000 years of human experience, ancient, although not obsolete, ancient and indigenous wisdom, spiritual tradition, not religion, but the spiritual traditions that predate the religions. Our ancestors had a very fundamental understanding of who they were in their relationship to the world. They answered the question, who am I, in a way that made sense to them. It wasn't science, but it worked. And later, hundreds, thousands of years later, the religions came along and wrapped the rules and the dogma around those fundamental understandings and actually began to drive people away from this sense of connectedness and from feeling that they are connected with their bodies and with one another and with the cosmos and with the earth.
Right.
So this is why this is so important, because we are steeped in a story about us and who we are that is based in false assumptions of science. And those false assumptions are unsustainable, and that is what the world has been based upon. And because they're unsustainable, that's why it looks like things are falling apart at the seams. So I just wanted to, that's a long answer to a short question,
no,
and I wanted to come full circle with
it. And it's really interesting, too, because you talk about this lens of perception, you know, that answering the question, who am I, creates this lens of perception. Doesn't that perception affect what we believe our potential is?
Well, this is the thing. We have been conditioned to believe that our potential falls within this limited box. So when it comes to, when we're faced with choices, for example, there are opportunities available to us, and healing is a perfect example.
Uh-huh.
There are opportunities available that most people will not even consider because it's not even in their box of choices.
Right.
That they have been conditioned to believe. So here's where I'm going with this. For 150 years, since the time of Charles Darwin, when he proposed his theories of who we are, how we have come to be as we are, and what our potential really is, those ideas have been embraced in the mainstream. And those ideas are at the foundation of our economic system. They're at the foundation of corporate systems. They're at the foundation of our medical system.
Right.
And here's why this is important. We've been steeped in this story that's based in separation, competition, conflict, and struggle. Separation, competition, conflict, and struggle. Darwin introduced these ideas on mid-1859 is when he released his book, so the mid to late 1800s. And I was just with an audience in Philadelphia at the convention center there, and we had a question in the audience and from an audience member, and the woman said, "Greg, I understand what you're saying, but Charles Darwin, that was 1859. This is the 21st century. What difference could that possibly make?" And it's a great question, because what people don't understand often is, yes, this is the 21st century, but we're living in a world, the foundations of the way we live were put in place in the late 1800s,
uh-huh.
early 1900s, precisely when these ideas, Darwin's and other people's, were proposed, and because they came from scientists, they were embraced very quickly, Christine. They weren't really questioned.
Right.
So the foundation of the very things that are falling apart, the unsustainable ways of thinking and living that have served us. I mean, we have to say they work because we're here.
Right.
It's just that we have outgrown them.
Mm-hmm.
Those foundations were actually put into place when Darwin and others began to answer the question, who are we? And his answers, the way he perceived the world. And I have to say, Darwin could not possibly have known in his day what we now know in ours. He simply did not have access to the science, to the technology. He didn't know about DNA. They thought cells were little packets of gooey stuff. That was it.
Right.
So I'm not chastising Darwin at all. Darwin was a brilliant scientist. He gave us a first step. And as I've written my books and I've researched, I've actually read Darwin's own words, not the interpretation.
Oh, interesting.
From modern scientists, but I've gone back to his manuscripts.
Uh-huh.
And I want to share something a lot of people don't know. Darwin said, before 1859, when we asked the question, who are we, and we wanted to answer the big questions of life, where do we come from, how do uh-huh. things work, how do we make things better in our lives, those answers all came from religious institutions, the church. And Darwin said, as a scientist, I would like to take the first step. He said, this isn't the end. This is a stepping stone. It's a bridge
right.
towards something down the road to move us away from the religion into something that is rock solid, that's science. And,
uh-huh.
and he said the first time that the first time a new discovery overturns my theory has to fall. It has to fall. And he was okay with that.
That's great.
So where we are today is that modern academics, universities, mainstream media, pop science, mm-hmm. as many people call it, documentaries, they will not allow Darwin's theories to fall, even though the evidence no longer supports it.
Right.
And the reason I'm saying this now, it's a kind of a long introduction, the new evidence is giving us a new answer. We say, who are we? What is our potential? What are we capable of in our lives?
And
new discoveries have given us new answers.
And we want to hear all about that. We have to go to a quick break, but when we return, why is that old science not true? And what does the new science say about our potential? With Greg Braden here, just in a few moments.
What is a brilliant culture?
And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful.
Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelmed and stressed? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath. To signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is, sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW, WBLQ, 35 stations in Australia, and of course, Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Greg, I'm really fascinated by science getting things wrong because I think that it's allowing us to have the opportunity to sort of open our minds to a broader version of reality. So can you please share with us in what ways science has gotten things wrong in terms of about in terms of answering that question, who are we?
Wow, what a great question. There are so many ways that we can answer this question, but what I'm just going to say it this way. If you ask a scientist, who are we? A scientist will say that before we can answer that, we have to answer six other questions. They're called perennial questions of life.
Huh.
So if I can invite our listeners, and if you're driving, keep your eyes on the road. But in your mind, if you can kind of envision an inverted pyramid, an upside-down pyramid, the points on the bottom, and in the center of that pyramid, from the point up to the top, there are six questions, and on the left side are the old ideas, and on the right side are the new ideas. So science says we've got to answer six questions. The first question is the most fundamental. What is the origin of life? Where does it come from? They say we have to answer that before we can answer who are we. The second question, what is the origin of human life? Because maybe human life doesn't come from where the other life comes from. The third question, what is our relationship to our body? Are we separate and connected, or are we, are we deeply connected, or are we separate and disconnected? The next question, what is our relationship to the world beyond our body? The next question is, what is our relationship to the past? Is it linear? Did it happen history happened once and we're the most sophisticated civilization, or is it cyclic? Have there been advanced civilizations here in the past?
Right.
And the last question is, what is the fundamental rule of nature? The left side of that pyramid, if you can imagine this, are the false assumptions that we all have been taught. We've been taught that the origin of life is random. The origin of human life is random. That our relationship to our body is separate, and that we are powerless when it comes to healing our bodies. This is why we need the medical model as we know it today.
Right, right.
We've been taught that we're separate from the world and essentially powerless to influence in any way what happens around us. We've been taught that civilization is linear. It happened once, began 5,000 years ago. We're the most sophisticated. And as I've mentioned earlier, we've been taught that the fundamental rule of nature is based upon competition, scarcity, conflict, and struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those, peer-reviewed science. So this isn't my theory. It's not a hypothesis. It's not wishful thinking or new thought, new age thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Peer-reviewed science has now overturned every one of those. Every one of those is now known to be false. New discoveries are showing us that the origin of life is not random. The origin of human life is not random. That we're deeply connected to our body, thoughts, feelings, emotions, beliefs, trigger a chemistry in our hearts and in our brains that's released into the body. And when we choose the thoughts, feelings, and emotions, we regulate that chemistry. Something very similar is happening with the world around us. Quantum physics is telling us we're connected.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer a question. The question is, how deep does that connection go? How much influence do we really have in the world?
Right. And then what kind of information exchange we get
Absolutely.
Through that connection.
New archaeological discoveries are telling us that civilization is cyclic. Approximately 5,000-year cycles that are driven by climate change, like we're having right now, and that there have been advanced civilizations here in the past. And the last question, science is now telling us the fundamental rule of nature is cooperation, not competition.
Uh-huh.
It is what biologists call mutual aid. So the new story, we're moving from this story of separation, conflict, competition, and struggle, to a new story of cooperation and mutual aid. That is what's happening on a fundamental level. We're seeing it play out in the world around us because the systems, based upon the false assumption, they're not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is changing, and those unsustainable models have to fall apart. So the economy of the world, it's based on competition and conflict.
Sure.
It's cracking at the seams, and we're, you know, they're trying to put Band-Aids on it, but the system is broken.
Mm-hmm.
The same with the corporate model, the same with the medical model. We now know that we are wired, our bodies are wired for self-healing when they are given the right environment. And that's
right.
A lot of what the new book is all about, and that's a lot of, we're going to talk about this some more in the program, but the key is that we are the generation that's pivoting from this old 300 years of thinking. Science began 300 years ago during the time of Isaac Newton. 150 years ago, Darwin introduced these ideas of competition and conflict. And now all of those ideas have been overturned by peer-reviewed science, Christine, on the one hand. And on the other hand, there is a reluctance, and I have to say I've encountered resistance
mm-hmm.
in the mainstream to share these in the classrooms, in the textbooks, in the mainstream media with our young people. And I want to be very clear. I'm not suggesting we throw all the old information out.
Right.
I think my opinion is the way to honor our young people. We're leaving them with a world and problems that they must solve that we've created, and it's a world we've never seen before. Nobody has a good instruction book to tell us what to do here.
You know,
Why not honor our young people with everything? Give them the old story. Give them the new discoveries that
uh-huh.
we're going to share here in this program, and let them know that the jury is still out. There are still mysteries to be solved, and we are still learning about ourselves and our relationship to the world. So they have the tools they need to solve the problems that we're leaving behind.
So if there's resistance, Greg, to bringing in the new science,
mm-hmm.
what is that about?
I can answer it very quickly. It's about habit, greed, money, and ego.
Uh-huh, right.
I have good friends. In the university system and the academics, they're good friends until we have this conversation.
Uh-huh.
And I have one friend, for example. We're going to talk about Charles Darwin after the break. And I have a very good friend. What I'm going to say after the break is that evolution is a fact As a geologist, I've seen it in the fossil record for plants and some forms of animals.
Uh-huh.
It breaks down when it comes to humans. The human story is no longer the story of evolution as we have been taught. The DNA is telling us that. So I asked my friend, why don't you share this? He said, Greg, if I shared that in the classroom, it would invalidate my 40 years of teaching. That's his thinking. I said, no, it would demonstrate to your students that science is designed to be constantly updated and how valid it is. And he said, well, think how much money it would cost to change the textbook. And
I said,
that's no problem because it's all digital. You change it on a server and it's changed everywhere.
Yeah.
And he said, the last argument, I'd have to change all of my class notes that I've developed for 40 years. And I said,
well, that's your job.
Oh,
dear.
That's just one example with one friend of mine.
Yeah.
But you get the idea. It's habit, ego, money, power.
Right.
Because the new story is a very empowering story.
And
in contrast with the story of powerlessness, helplessness, and separation that we've all been conditioned to embrace.
Yeah, because we'll have to answer that question differently. Who am I
exactly.
If we have this new information? And that can threaten all sorts of structures that be. And you know, Greg, it seems to me that there's so many bureaucracies. It's like whether we're talking about school systems, whether we're talking about some of the scientific community, whether we're talking about government, the number one function of a bureaucracy is to maintain itself, to keep itself going. So it's, in a sense, it's like this threatens the very structure of the bureaucracies that exist.
It can, Christine. And also, I want to leave our listeners, I want to be very honest, and there's a lot of good news here. The change is happening. It's happening slowly. So, for example, in 2007, I released a book that was entitled Divine Matrix. It was a New York Times bestseller.
Uh-huh. I love that book.
It was the science that documents the existence of the field of energy, non-conventional energy that connects all things in our uh-huh. relationship to the field. It was considered fringe science in 2007.
Right.
Right now, 2016, that book is a textbook in the physics department in Canadian universities under a category, a special category of society and science is where they're bringing this in. So
that's great.
It is actually required reading in the university, and it's happening in other countries as well, and there are very progressive colleges here in the U.S. that are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the change is slow. And the change is happening slower. The change in our understanding of our relationship to the world is happening slower than the change in the world that's requiring us to think differently.
Right.
So the thinking now has to work to catch up with the reality of what's happening in our lives and our world. And once it does, this is why my dear friend, spiritual brother, my colleague, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and I, we're invited to speak at the UN
uh-huh.
Recently about the world, where the world is going, the cycle, the rhythms of change, what we saw happening. And they were incorporating this into their models of where they're going to put their energy and their time, their money and their resources over the next 15 years. And I shared with them precisely what we're saying right now. We're moving from this model of competition to the model of cooperation. And that changes everything when we go about solving our problems, how we share energy, how we share resources,
uh-huh.
how, you know, water, food,
right.
how we share energy, communications.
And how we work within the business world.
Those things. And the business models that are not recognizing this shift, those are the ones that are struggling right
uh-huh.
now, and some of them simply are not surviving. So there is a new world that's emerging out there. And the way that we think of ourselves in here, and I'm pointing to my heart right now, in here, the way that we feel about ourselves and our relationship to the world will determine how easily we make that shift and that transition.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the rest of this program, what I'd like to do is share the discoveries that tell us in scientific terms, not technical, it's not complicated, but they're scientific terms, why we are literally wired to thrive.
Yeah.
In this new world that's emerging, not just survive, but to thrive in the new world that's emerging. And I think that's the good news that's coming from all of these new discoveries.
And it's very exciting. And we've got to go another quick break, but more with Greg Braden when we return here in just a few moments.
I can't believe that. I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field, or aura, surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura, which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Have you ever wanted to learn about the colors of your chakras? Well, now's your chance. Lynn Brown, host of Get Into It, is hosting an event Friday, November 4th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. in Mount Vernon. Every person will get a reading on the most prominent color in their aura. Join Lynn Brown November 4th at the Riverwalk Studio in Mount Vernon. To register for this event, call 360-588-4713. That's 360-588-4713.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit the fearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm having a wonderful conversation today with Greg Braden, author of, I don't know, a gazillion books. I think it's 11 now in 38 languages. And we're talking about how science has shifted our sort of estimate of what reality is. And it's a very empowering perspective. Now, Greg, before we continue, I want to make sure that people know how to connect with you, and I want to make sure we mention the Celebrate Your Life event that's coming up in a few weeks as well, because otherwise I'm just going to forget about it. So let's get that out of the way. What's your website?
Thank you very much, Christine. The website's www.gregbraden.com, and it's GREGGBRADEN, all one word, .com. Those two G's, my mom did that on purpose because I'm not a Gregory.
Okay.
I mean, two G's means a Greg.
Uh-huh.
And I will be at Celebrate Your Life. And many of the things that we're talking about now, I will do two presentations, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. They're very visual presentations, very fast moving, where you'll be able to see the research and the literally see what the scientists have seen that led them to the conclusions that they are right now.
Yeah, and Celebrate Your Life's a fabulous event. I went last year. It's a large event with some amazing people, including Greg, and you can find out about that at celebrateyourlife.org, I believe, right?
Yeah, November 5th and 6th, celebrateyourlife.org.
Yeah. Okay, so the science that you talk about that's so new and empowering, what does this mean for us in terms of how we're shifting and who we are?
Well, we've just covered a lot of ground. So we opened the show saying the world is changing.
Uh-huh.
And we, our lives are changing because the foundation of our social structures and our economy and our jobs, careers, healthcare, all of that are based in ideas that were developed in the mid to late 1800s. They worked for a period of time, but we know they're based in false assumptions. Uh-huh. Science has now overturned those, and this is what we're talking about now. The question, who am I? Who are we? Science is giving us new ways to answer that. So in the time that we have remaining, I'm going to zero right in on us. We're going to forget about civilizations and the fundamental of nature and all of that. We're going to zero in on us. We have been steeped in this story, Christine, of human evolution. That all life began, including us, began from a single cell that mysteriously formed. We don't know how. And that we have evolved slowly, gradually over long periods of time. That's being taught in the schools as fact today. The problem is the physical data doesn't support the story.
Really?
When we look at, for example, the human evolutionary family tree, I'm sure everyone has seen the tree with, there's a skull of a modern human on top and then the skulls of other primates and other beings below.
Uh-huh.
Those are all connected, but if you look closely, the lines that connect them are dashed lines, and they are dashed because they're inferred or speculative relationships. They are believed to exist. However, after 150 years, the best universities, the best, most sophisticated equipment, the greatest minds, in searching for these missing links have yet to be found, the DNA now, I think, is telling us why. So we know that the evolution, as Darwin proposed, the evidence breaks down when it comes to us. What the DNA is telling us now is that we are actually not related to some of the beings that we have been taught to think that we are related to on that tree. Neanderthal, for example.
Wow.
The DNA, the science, this is like CSI science, Christine. It's so amazing. There, scientists are able to actually cull the DNA from the bone marrow of fossilized remains. It sounds like science fiction, but
yeah, sounds a little like Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Well, it is Jurassic Park stuff, and that's where the movie actually came from when the science was being developed. So when scientists compared the genome, for example, of Neanderthal to modern humans, lo and behold, there's not enough overlap, and what they're saying, peer-reviewed science says they are not our ancestors. We didn't descend from Neanderthals. We shared the earth with them, so we could not have descended from them.
Uh-huh.
There is another form of life that many of us have heard of in the past, Cro-Magnon.
Right.
When I was in school back in the 60s, it was called Cro-Magnon. Now that term is no longer used. It's been replaced with the acronym AMH. It means anatomically modern human.
Mm-hmm.
And that's self-explanatory. Anatomically modern humans showed up on Earth 200,000 years ago. There's no evolutionary path leading to them. We do not know why they showed up. But they showed up 200,000 years ago, and we haven't changed since. They are us. We are them. Their DNA and our DNA.
In 200,000 years, we have not changed.
200,000 years. And this is one of the mysteries. Now, what scientists are saying is we don't know how that happened.
Uh-huh.
But when we look at the DNA, what we find, one of the telling clues, I don't want to get really technical, but I'm going to share some science. The second largest chromosome in our bodies is human chromosome number 2. It's about 8% of all the DNA in every cell. That chromosome, very mysterious, it is the result of a fusion, an ancient fusion of 2 primate chromosomes to give us this one human chromosome 2 that contributes to the brain size that we have, to our mental function, to our abilities of things like empathy, compassion, intuition. All of this comes from this fusion of DNA. And not only did the fusion happen, but what the science is now showing, it's from National Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences, 1991, published this data, is that after the fusion happened, and this is just mind-blowing, is that the overlapping functions, the redundant functions, so there were 2 pre-existing chromosomes, they were merged, so obviously there were some things that were overlapping.
Uh-huh.
The overlapping things were either turned off or removed. to streamline the resulting DNA, to make it stable, to make it efficient, to give us the uniqueness that we have today. And that was not possible through evolution, at least as we know evolution today. Evolution is not the story.
So that sounds like there was some science involved, and we may have been, you know, altered in a petri dish or something.
Well, this is where the science, and as a scientist, and to be honest with our listeners, I have to be very clear about this. The science cannot tell us why it happened. The science cannot tell us what triggered this. Science can tell us how it happened. And what they're saying is, scientists are saying, peer-reviewed journals, there was a fusion. After the fusion, the resulting chromosome was modified, stabilized, streamlined, and they have to stop there. Now, every indigenous tradition that I've ever studied, they have a story as to why this happened. Science has had a story called evolution,
right.
And now our story is changing because the DNA is telling us that evolution is not the story. But here's where I want to go with it. We could do a whole program on what I've just said.
Right.
Here's where we are right now. That DNA, the DNA gave us extraordinary abilities that no other form of life has, and this is what empowers us in our world. When we showed up 200,000 years ago, our brain is 50% larger than the nearest primate ancestor.
Uh-huh.
We had advanced language. We had what is called an extended neural network, and this is where we're going to go with this. We have the ability to tune our nervous system in a way that no other form of life can, for extraordinary capabilities, including into empathy, compassion, and all of these kinds of things. And this is what I wanted to talk about now for the rest of our program.
Fabulous. And Benny, I think we're going to skip this next break because this is too juicy to step away from. Okay, so Greg, if we have these abilities, then what does that mean for us in terms of who we are and where we're going?
Well, we have been conditioned to believe that we are limited in our potential through the old ideas of science. And this is the value of understanding what these new discoveries mean. I'm not judging or saying it's right, wrong, good, or bad, or mistakes of where we've been.
Sure.
This is where we are now. The world is changing. We've got to think and live differently than we ever have in the past. And now the science is telling us that we have the inner ability to embrace this change, to become resilient to big changes. You know, change is hard for a lot of people.
It is. Oh, yeah.
But resilience begins with our hearts and the nervous system in the heart. So one of the new discoveries, Christine, is, and I talk about this, there's a new book called Resilience from the Heart, and everything I'm saying to you right now is in the first chapter of that book. Scientists discovered in 1991 about 40,000 specialized cells concentrated in the human heart. They're called sensory neurites, and that's a fancy word. They're essentially brain-like cells, but they're not in our brain. They're in our heart.
Right.
So we have the cells in our heart to think independently of the cells in the brain, the neurons in the brain.
And that is so very different than what I was taught in school.
Well, I was as well. I was taught the brain is the master organ in the body.
Yes.
And now we know, and actually that's still being taught in medical school today. I've had students in my classes that say they're not even talking about these new discoveries. But the key is the brain's important. The brain releases the chemistry into our bodies. It regulates all kinds of things, you know, hormones and, everything. But the key is the brain receives many of the instructions to tell it what to do from the heart, and we regulate the heart through our emotions. So all of a sudden, we are now part of the picture rather than separate from the picture. We're part of the story. So these specialized cells in the heart, three things that they do. They think independently of the brain in our head. They feel independently of the brain in our head. And they have a memory. Our heart neurons have a memory that is independent from the memory that we have in the brain in our head. We communicate with our heart differently than we do with our brain. We're conditioned to think with our brain, and we know how to do that very well. There's a very different language, literally the language of the heart. So this is where everything comes full circle, because this is new to science. What I'm saying is relatively new to the scientific world. It is not new to our indigenous, ancient and indigenous traditions of our ancestors. And when I spend time with the shaman in the Yucatan, or the monks and the nuns, and the abbots and the monasteries of Bolivia and Peru and Tibet, they have honed the techniques to access this extended neural network, literally to harmonize the heart and the brain together. Two separate organs.
Interesting.
One powerful neural network. And when they do that, you know, people say, well, why would you want to do that?
Yep.
When we do that, what we do, by harmonizing the heart and the brain together through a process of breath, breathing technique, and intentional emotion. And I'm hesitating because I'm not sure how far we can actually go into this, but it's breath and intentional emotion. When we harmonize the heart and the brain, we open the door to a plethora of advanced and extended and extraordinary capabilities that I believe are actually ordinary that we simply have forgotten. So, for example, when we harmonize the heart and the brain, we trigger the self-healing mechanism that our body is designed to experience. Literally, the self-healing, the anti-aging hormones in our body that heal the DNA. We literally trigger those. A powerful immune response, powerful cardiovascular system. We trigger intentional and deep intuition. We trigger super learning. We trigger a hotline, direct access to the subconscious for healing when we need that.
Right.
We trigger resilience
wow.
to change in life so we can embrace big change in our personal lives, reflecting big change in the big world. All of that from harmonizing the heart and the brain, and it's because of the DNA that we were given 200,000 years ago that this is possible. No other form of life can do this. So when we ask the question, who are we? These new discoveries are now telling us that we are empowered, powerful beings of great potential, connected to our world, not separate from our world, and that we are wired to thrive in times of change if we can embrace these abilities that are a natural part of our everyday being.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Greg, one of the things that I hear, you probably hear the same thing about how people are no longer content with the status quo. Even if they wanted to be, they can't seem to accept, you know, not changing. So it sounds to me like what the science is indicating is there are ways of tapping in to the heart and the heart-brain connection so that we can actually not only deal with the change, but become empowered to help transform our lives and perhaps the world.
Well, precisely. And this is where I see a tremendous and beautiful symmetry coming together here, Christine, because when the world was kind of chugging along and everything was kind of okay, there was no impetus. There was no need to understand these things about ourselves. And I think it's no accident that just as the world is going through this tremendous change, that we now, science, has come full circle and is now confirming what many of our most ancient and cherished traditions have told us in a way that was not science, but they understood it. So that we can embrace our deepest truth, the deepest truths of who we are in the world, and thrive to become the best people we can be and create the best world possible. And that's where all of this comes together. It's hard to draw a line between the world out there and the world in our living rooms and the what's happening in our lives. You know, I mean, a bank goes under halfway around the world, and all of a sudden our 401k or our kids, you know, college savings takes a hit.
Sure.
A country on the other side of the planet decides to create energy by burning coal instead of going with something new, and all of a sudden the weather patterns are affecting the way we can grow food and what jobs we have. I mean, it's hard to draw the line between out there and in here.
Right.
And so as we embrace these new deep truths and we embody them in the decisions that we make in a changing world, as we learn that cooperation is the fundamental rule of nature, not competition, mutual aid, not struggle.
Right.
And as we embrace the connectivity rather than the separation, then we are harmonizing with nature's most fundamental rules. And I think we can't go wrong if we do that. I think this is the model. I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know how to make what every decision is going to be, but if we can fall back to these fundamental truths, that we live in a world of connection, not separation, that mm-hmm. we live in a world of cooperation, not competition, that we are connected to our bodies, connected to one another, and that civilization is cyclic. We've been here before, and we can learn from our past.
Right.
If we can embrace those deep truths, then I think we have everything we need to build the beautiful new world that we all know is possible, and to build the model for what that looks like. And that's why I'm so optimistic about where we are now. And are things falling apart, as you said at the beginning of the program? Uh-huh. Absolutely, because they're unsustainable.
Right.
But the flip side of that is the only things breaking down are the ones that are unsustainable. So the things that are not breaking down are the things that we know are true in our lives. And each of us has to know for ourselves really what that is, that those become our anchors, our spiritual anchors,
mm-hmm.
that really help us to get through the change that we're seeing in our lives.
And I'm wondering, Greg, if the name of the game is really sort of connecting with the heart in a new way and harmonizing the heart and brain and having to let go of a whole lot of things that aren't working, how do individuals deal with this letting go and deal with, you know, facing the illusions of the disconnection and the pain that comes from seeing what we have created, where we're living, what's going on in our world?
That's a good question. You know, it is kind of it's one of those questions where the answer becomes self-explanatory, because the only time we have to let go is when we are clinging to something from our past. As we become aware, and this is the value of sharing these new discoveries, as we become aware of how things really work, the deep truth of our relationship to our bodies and the world, we don't have to let go. All of a sudden, it just no longer makes sense. We've outgrown the old story.
Right.
And we're embracing, we're building a new human story. I think, you know, I know we're close to the end of our program today. Buckminster Fuller, who I have tremendous respect for, he died before I had the chance. He died in 1983. I never had the opportunity to meet him, but he was an amazing visionary and scientist. And he spoke of our time right now. He said, and this is a direct quote, he said, "You're never going to change things by fighting the existing reality." And when we try to hang on to an old world, that is, in a sense, that's our way of fighting. He said, if you want to change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And that's what we're doing now. We're building a new world, and we're building new lives based upon cooperation and connection. And when we embrace that, we don't have to really let go of the others. We don't have to, because they fall away of their own volition. They no longer make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the word that comes to me is that we've outgrown them. They served us. We've outgrown them, and now we're growing into a new model.
Yeah,
and it takes a generation to do that, and we are the generation.
Yeah, and it sounds like we are empowered, and we just need to wake up to that.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, this hour has flown by, Greg. In 30 seconds or less, do you want to share a last little nugget of wisdom?
You know, I think we've done it in our 30 seconds. I want to thank our listeners for precisely that, for making time in their lives to listen. To the degree that's possible, to embrace these new discoveries. And when we do that, the old way of thinking just no longer makes sense, and then we don't have to work to let it go.
Love that. Love that. GregBraden.com, GregBraden. And I'm so grateful you joined us here today, Greg. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine, for the work you do, you and Benny, and for the program you offer. And thank you for your friendship and for being in my life. I love working together, and I look forward to the next time.
That sounds great. Thank you, Greg. And thank you all for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again sometime real soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.